Blog Talk Radio.
We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. More than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. More than a paycheck to our loved ones and family.
I wanted more pay, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home master doses
and silly courses for long, long, that long disease. And the radiation that hits the children before they've really been conceived. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families.
I wanted more pay, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home
asbestosis and silly courses for round, long, black, long disease. And the radiation that hits the children before they've really been conceived.
We bring more,
all righty. Greetings, greetings, greetings. This is your host, Jamal Brown. You're listening live to the Gist of Freedom radio show. I, along with our guests, are tuning in from sunny Southern California. We'd like to welcome those on the West Coast, along with our listeners listening there on the East Coast and our listeners listening worldwide. We have a fantastic lineup for you this evening. We have on the line with us right now a fantastic brother, a brother who goes far beyond the average in doing work that uplifts our community, doing work that makes our ancestors proud, doing work that reaches forward and without a doubt helps our community in the future years and years to come, generations to come, are truly blessed by the things that this brother does. His name is Dr. Bill Rutherford. Again, I had the fantastic opportunity to meet this brother a few years back. He hosts what is called the Black Barbershop Health Outreach Program. I hope I'm saying it right.
And the Black Barbershop Health Outreach Program.
Fantastic, fantastic. At this event, there are a number of celebrities who attend, a number of health experts who attend, a number of health screenings that take place. I'll let him tell you more about all the details of the wonderful event. But I truly took away some remarkable information. There were a number of people who got free health screenings that day. Dr. Dick Gregory was there, was the keynote speaker. There were others like Maxine Waters who were in attendance. Truly, 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 truly was a phenomenal event. I was able to purchase Dr. Rutherford's book, and I've had the opportunity to go through it and learn some fantastic things, that book being The Five Colors to Better Health. He was gracious enough to autograph it, and we had a small conversation that I've kept with me since that day. Let me just step out the way. Without any further ado, let me bring on our guest, Dr. Bill Rutherford. How are you doing this afternoon, good brother?
I'm doing fantastic. And what about yourself?
Nah, if I was doing any better, it might be illegal. I'm doing that way.
I know all about it.
Yeah, well, since our time is short, we only got 30 minutes. I wish we had 30 hours to hear from you and all the wonderful things that you do. Let's just jump right on into this thing. Tell us, our listening audience, who is Dr. Rutherford?
Wow, that's a heavy question. Well, Dr. Rutherford is a passionate person who is committed to addressing healthcare disparities particularly the African American community. I've been practicing for over 25 years, and I've, for the most part, dedicated my life to addressing the amputation rate in the African American community, both of course, domestically as well as internationally. So with that, I founded a number of of outreach efforts that our goal is to communicate with people in a way that's culturally appropriate and culturally specific, and to help make people make the necessary lifestyle changes so that they can lead a more productive and just a more healthier life.
Awesome, awesome. 25 years of service to the community. That's fantastic. Fantastic. Let me ask you, tell us a little bit more about your field in particular that you are practicing, and what made you choose that field?
Well, I'm a podiatric surgeon, which means I specialize in diseases and trauma and injury to the foot and ankle. I got into this particular field after, actually, in undergrad, I did some work in West Africa where we did research on tropical diseases that affect the lower extremity. And from that point forward, I had an affinity for this particular part of the human anatomy, the lower extremity. Started out wanting to go into sports medicine, but many times the community dictates to you what it needs. Sometimes
That's right.
It's not all about us. Sometimes it's about who you are trying to about serve. So we had so many people come into the office that were recommended for amputation that didn't need an amputation. And from that point forward, I decided to dedicate my career to preventing amputations.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful and truly is priceless. I would like to thank you for that, and I'm sure the number of people that you have served along with their families and unborn families, thank you for that as well. You said something interesting. You said that a number of people have come to you being recommended for amputations but not actually needing them. That makes me ask the question, the obvious question in my mind, what makes these other doctors diagnose so many of our brothers and sisters or recommend that they have amputations? What's the reason for that?
Well, it's multifaceted, and there's many variables that will lead a person recommended for an amputation prematurely. So let's talk about internal risk factors and external risk factors. So internal mean those risk factors related to the patient themselves. Mm-hmm. And I would say that lack of education about their own health, number one, lack of education about the standard of care that they deserve when they go to the doctor. That's a risk factor.
Okay.
Of course, your lifestyle and your eating habits and social habits all are contributory to you being recommended for an amputation. So that's what you do to put yourself at risk.
That's right.
And then externally, then there could be or is the lack of perhaps cultural competence or cultural understanding or the lack of understanding of diverse cultural populations that someone may recommend someone for amputation because they just don't feel the feel that patient. Somebody got to feel your patients.
That's right.
And then maybe other ethnic groups don't see what I see when I see Miss Jenkins sitting up in the chair. Miss Jenkins looks like Big Mama, Aunt Rosie, and all the other perhaps people in my family. They don't see Big Mama when they see Miss Rosie sitting in the chair. They just see a black woman. Mm-hmm. They don't see, you know, Uncle Jim. They just see a black man sitting in the chair. So I think that's why, you know, cultural competence in our healthcare delivery system is so important. And another factor that is contributory to the amputation rate being astronomically high in our community is the fact that hospitals and some doctors are actually compensated more for amputation than for salvaging a limb. So there should be efforts to reimburse doctors based upon success rather than failure. So doctors and hospitals may look at, and this is, we live in a capitalist society, so we have to, you know, consider the fact that that is maybe a factor, that people may be driven by economics versus by trying to do good work.
Mm-hmm. That is tragic. That is tragic. I recently came across some statistics or financial information about women and hysterectomies and how much money is made by the doctors and the hospitals and all that stuff, to, as you sort of alluded to cut and destroy rather than heal and help. You know, that's something
exactly.
that truly is tragic. Mm-hmm. Truly is tragic. Mm-hmm. All right, in your 25 years of work, let us hear some of the biggest obstacles that you've had to overcome. So what are some of the challenges that you faced and things that sort of set you back on your heels a little bit that you had to step back and figure out a master game plan to overcome?
Mm, that's a good question. Well, medicine has changed significantly over the years since I started in the late 80s. And now you have to be more comprehensive in your care, add some diversity to your care, and to multitask and develop multiple ways to take care of a patient. You know, for example, now we offer diabetic shoes, and we have some new technologies to prevent an amputation. In fact, we've just instituted stem cells, bone marrow aspirate stem cells to help to augment and heal wounds and to restore the circulation in some of our patients. So I'm saying that to say that the one-dimensional practice of years ago, for the most part, outdated and antiquated. So physicians, in order for physicians to survive now, they've got to have a multitude of avenues to survive and to do the work and the quality of work that they want to do.
Mm.
And so with the changes of healthcare, sometimes that can be a challenge for many healthcare providers, and if they don't make the necessary adaptations, then you know they could be in a little trouble.
Right. You got to adapt or be taken over. What it sounds like, or you'll be out
of
the game.
Absolutely.
I hear that loud and clear. Okay, we talked about challenges. Now let's hear from you some of the successes that you've seen in your 25 years of work. Tell us about some of those things that make you proud. Those things, I don't know if you're a parent or grandparent, but those things that you'll tell, those stories that you'll tell your grandkids one day that made you proud and made our ancestors proud.
Well, because of the work I do in barbershops around the country, that led to me being invited to the White House by the Obama administration for the Super Bowl party. So
okay.
I received an invitation about a week prior to Super Bowl Sunday of this year. I was saying that you've been invited to the Super Bowl party by the Obama administration, and they were just so gracious, and I was just incredibly excited to learn that little old Dr. Rutherford was invited to the Super Bowl party on that Sunday. So that was all in the news, and it was just a really proud moment for me to see the work that we were doing in the community resonate all the way to the White House.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So again, you attended? You attended? Tell us a little bit about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I was right there with J-Lo and Al Sharpton and other members of the Obama administration. And so it was a very fine moment and a crown jewel, I would say, in the work that I've been able to do over the several decades.
That's fantastic. So let's make it straight, make it plain for all of our listeners. Bill Rutherford, Dr. Bill Rutherford, was at the White House catching a football game with the president. Am I
yes,
understanding that correctly?
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
And it was on the news, you know, local doctor goes to White House for the Super Bowl party, and all my friends and colleagues, just their mouths were just open. Like, I know he didn't go to the White House, and I was there. So that is something I could definitely share with my grandchildren and others, and just a nice thing to have in, you know, in the history books of what I've been able to achieve.
That's awesome. That is awesome. A little while ago, you spoke of cultural competence. I want to hear a little bit more from you about what it means to treat an African-American person, a person of African descent. How is that different? For some people, that's a new concept. They thought, hey, aren't we all people? Aren't we all born, most of us born with two arms, two legs, two eyes, one mouth, two ears, et cetera. But you know, as well as I know, that there is a difference when it comes to treating people of African descent. Talk to us a little bit about what are some of those differences.
Well, studies have shown that people feel comfortable with people that look and act like them,
mm-hmm.
period. If a Korean may feel more comfortable with another Korean doctor
mm-hmm.
with the same or identical skill set, they're going to go with someone who looks like them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the event that someone has to cross over to another ethnic group to receive some kind of service or care, there may be some gaps in communication. For example, when we say, okay, let me give you an example. When my patients come to my office, I already know what they had to eat for a late check.
Okay. So what are some of those things?
They don't know that.
Tell us real quick so we might have
some. I know you had the hot links. I know you had the
hot links.
I know you had the oxtails. I know you had the ham hocks and stuff like that. I know you may have had some crackling bacon and all that type of stuff. See, other folks don't know that.
So that patient walking through the door, their numbers are through the roof. The cholesterol numbers,
the blood pressure,
diabetes,
and all that stuff. So I can go straight down the line and say, I know what you had dinner last night. I know you had some hot links, some Johnny hot links, or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, you right, how did you know? So other doctors, a Korean doctor, may not know what
crackling bacon even is.
No, they don't know what that is. So in order to have, I think, better compliance, cultural competency is important.
Mm-hmm.
Because my patients know I really know what time it is. I know
right.
what's going on. So I tell them, you can fool them, but you can't fool me. Yeah, you're right.
That's right.
And communication. When some of our older patients come in, they may just call their toes their fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they're talking about. They call their tendons leaders.
Mm.
I know what they're talking about.
That's
I know
right.
exactly what they're talking about. So someone else would just kind of look at them, here you come from.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all about cultural competency. The same thing can happen if someone is Hispanic or Korean or ethnic group Vietnamese. So the issue of cultural competence means that as a healthcare provider or someone in the service industry, you have to perhaps take a course or take another step to understand the diverse population that you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you may want to hire some people that are African-American that can deal with the Miss Joneses and the Jenkins in your practice.
That's right.
Okay. To make sure that you have someone that speaks another language in your office, Hispanic or Spanish or, you know, whatever the language in that demographic area may be. That shows respect that you've gone an extra mile to provide a service that's reliable and sensitive to their specific needs.
That's right. That's wonderful.
For example, in my office, I have jazz playing.
Okay.
Most of my patients are African-American. I have historic jazz pictures throughout the office that speaks to them.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to the Cotton Club. I remember watching Billie Holiday when she was at Club Alabama or whatever.
Mm. These are some of the conversations coming through the door,
conversations,
huh?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And speak, if you can, real briefly to how just those initial numbers, the blood pressure and stuff, might drop a point or two. Or on the converse of that, when they're going to somewhere unfamiliar, somewhere cold, those numbers may raise a percentage or two. Am I right with that assumption?
That's correct. Well, I do all my surgeries with jazz.
Oh, wow.
So before I do my surgery, the jazz is playing in the operating room.
Mm. And what is that doing? What is that doing to the patients?
They, oh, that sounds so good, that's rough, and I'm calming them down, communicating with them, talking to them through music,
mm-hmm.
so they can understand it. If it was bluegrass or country western, it may not speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I know jazz and blues does for my demographic.
That's right. That's awesome.
And as a result, they love it. They talk about the some. Oh, I went into the operating room and Dr. Rover had jazz playing.
That's awesome.
See the difference?
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. Again, cultural competence right there manifested.
Exactly.
That's a beautiful thing.
And they like seeing African American employees in my office.
Mm.
That's a part of cultural competence.
Certainly. Certainly, certainly. At the top of the call, Dr. Rutherford, we spoke about the Black Barbershop Health Outreach Program. Tell us a little bit more about that. I'm on the website right now, www.blackbarbershop.org. Again, blackbarbershop.org. The site looks fantastic. We see a brother taking some sort of a health screening right there. We see some fantastic sisters with some nutritional things in the background. We see the Obama administration being represented there. Tell us a little bit more about that. How that got started, what exactly it is, and the pertinent things we need to know about it.
You know, as you know, Black men don't go to the doctor.
That's right.
For whatever reasons, either fear, finances, economics, racism, all those things culminate into the perfect storm and the end result that Black men don't end up at the doctor, the Black men don't end up in care.
Mm-hmm.
Preventive care. And the barbershop historically has been a place where African American men have felt comfortable. We call it the Black Man's Country Club.
That's
so
right.
You can get just about anything you want from the barbershop.
Yeah, I'm talking about stock tips, health tips, who's going to win the game,
DVD,
who won the game
DVD,
last night.
DVDs, tennis shoes, down to tennis shoes.
That's right.
Yeah. You get in a barbershop, you can find out what's happening in town. So the barbershop is the perfect place where, and the only place where you have a cross-section of African-American men socioeconomically, where you have the doctor, the preacher, drug dealer, rapper, all in the same place. Because whatever you do, you got to come to the barbershop in the hood, get your head done right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one of our supporters who lives in Beverly Hills, and he's African American. He says, I can get everything I want in Beverly Hills except collard greens and a haircut. He got to come down
to the hood,
get a haircut. Exactly. Mm. So the Black Barbershop Program began in December of 2007 in Los Angeles and has grown to be a nationally recognized health outreach program where to date we've screened over 20,000 men in about 26 cities and 475 barbershops around the country. And we've been able to see how change in behavior with some of our men that we've encountered. Unfortunately, some men have never been to the doctor in their adult lives, and many have to be taken directly to the emergency room. The barbershop because of life-threatening test results. So well, we believe that this type of place-based health outreach is important and very effective, and this type of innovation we believe could be duplicated in other types of disease processes.
Mm. That is awesome. 26 cities. Shout out a few that you've been to.
We've been to Atlanta. We've been to Chicago. We've been to all five boroughs in New York. We've been to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We've been to West Palm Beach, Florida. We've been to Kansas City. We've been to St. Louis. We've been to Phoenix, Arizona. Of course, most of the large cities in California, Sacramento, San Diego, Oakland, Fresno, San Bernardino.
Man.
Yes, we've been quite a few places. We've been to not Utah, one of the other places. I'm losing my train of thought here, but we are about to launch our 50-city tour.
Okay.
In April. Starting in the great state of Indiana, we'll be in five cities. We'll be in Fort Wayne, Indianapolis, South Bend, Gary, and Evansville.
Okay.
Our goal is to screen a couple of thousand men on that day in those five cities. And so we're getting a lot of feedback already and a lot of media attention about what we're doing with our 50-city tour. We hope to screen close to 20,000 men just this year alone with our 50-city tour movement.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, we've thrown out the word screen a number of times here. Tell us some of the screenings that one can receive if they attend one of these Black Barbershop events.
We go into, we screen for diabetes, hypertension, and we give educational information about prostate cancer decision-making because, of course, that's a big issue in our community is prostate cancer. So on any given Saturday in one of our participating barbershops, you can go in and see a nurse or a doctor there at the table ready to screen you and give you good information about lifestyle changes and things like that, and if necessary, refer you to the doctor for follow-up care. So this is something that, of course, is free of charge, and we are funded by either pharmaceutical companies, by CDC or NIH, and sometimes a little bit by myself. But at the end of the day, we know that we are changing lives and that we are helping somebody's daddy, brother, son, uncle, employee, employer.
And generations to come after that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The unborn souls. That is
absolutely.
That is phenomenal. That truly is phenomenal. A little while ago, we talked about preventative maintenance, preventative measures, and things of that nature. Now, I know that you have this wonderful book that I purchased and used as a reference guide, the Five Colors to Better Health. Tell us a little bit more about the book, and then tell us a little bit more about some things that we can do when it comes to sitting down at the table. But first, get into that book of yours a little bit for me.
Well, I wrote the book several years ago because I saw a trend in those patients that were healthy and those patients that were not so healthy. And just by doing an informal survey, I found that the healthiest patients in my practice ate five colors every day. They ate something red, something purple, something green, something yellow, something white. Because then they come in with a lot of medications. They didn't come in with a whole list of illnesses. They were pretty healthy compared to those people that were half their age that were riddled with all types of chronic diseases. So I started to do additional research and write a book about, you know, what these people were doing to have longevity and productivity in their life. So the Five Colors to Better Health is a roadmap on to show you the benefits of eating unprocessed foods and a variety of fruits and vegetables and to eat by color.
Okay.
Typically, the American Heart Association or any other entity may say you need to eat 5 to 7 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But unfortunately, no one knows what a serving is when you get to the restaurant. You know, you don't know what serving is. But if you eat by color, you know what colors are, hopefully, and you can count to 5.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a better way to motivate people to monitor the quantity and quality of the food that they eat. So someone may say, well, for breakfast I had some purple, some blueberries and some strawberries in my oatmeal. And perhaps for lunch I had some carrots and spinach and some collard greens or whatever. And for dinner I had some cauliflower and some leeks or something like that or radishes.
Okay.
So throughout the day you should eat five colors. Your plate should look like a rainbow. When you sit down and look at it, it should look like a flower. If it's brown and tarnished with a roll and mashed potatoes and gravy and a two-piece chicken dinner, then chances are you're not eating enough of the right foods.
No color in that. Hardly any.
No color.
No variety,
all brown.
For sure.
It's all brown, all washed out.
Mm-hmm.
All brown and washed out.
Okay,
so
okay.
That's the premise of the book. And then I talk about, you know, the chapter everyone talks about a lot is the chapter called Real Sexual Healing. So where
real,
we talk about
say that,
how
say that title for me again?
Real Sexual Healing.
Okay, that's a topic, a hot topic amongst
that's
brothers
a hot
for
topic.
Sure.
And we talk about, you know, let's just, you know, make it real. If you want to do your homework properly, your homework, quote unquote homework, then you need to be fit to, as the brother say, put it down.
Put it down.
You can't do it by smoking cigarettes and eating hamburgers and drinking soda. Just like a car, if you want your Maserati to run right, you got to give it 92 octane.
High octane.
If you want to be a high octane performance brother.
If you don't, then that's
on you.
That's right.
So if you want to be a high octane performing brother, then you need to make sure that, number one, you're exercising every day. Number two, you're giving your body the nutrients that it needs for you to deliver what you need to deliver. And that means five colors every day. There's certain, like broccoli has all the micronutrients that has nitric oxide that helps to expand the blood vessels. Almonds does the same thing. And so that combined with exercise program, you won't need any Viagra or any other pill to help you doing what you need to do. If you are a little overweight, that weight slows you down. You need to lose that weight so you can be agile, you can be fit, so you can have high performance. So there's a lot of people out there, they're even in leadership positions, and I even question them, you know, are you fit to lead? And I think we need to question some of our leaders the same way we do about what's your position on abortion, what's your position on affirmative action, what's your position on personal health, what are you doing? Can I follow you home and look in your cabinets? Can I watch, you know, are you going to the gym? Because people that are more health conscious tend to make better decisions, and they also tend to support legislation if they are in some type of government position. They support legislation that supports healthier environments for our people. So
awesome.
I think we need to add some additional criteria to when we decide to choose or support a certain individual.
I agree 100%. And like you said, this isn't a piece of a paper or a piece of legislation or something that they can hide behind. You know, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. We can look at them and see. You know, we can do the quick eye test.
Exactly.
We can do the eye test and see.
Absolutely.
See if they are doing what they need to do. And like you said, a conscious person who's health conscious, has been my experience as well, seems to be 9 times out of 10 a little bit more extra conscious overall. I know there's people that would argue me to the cows came home with regard to that statement, but I'll say the good doctor told me, and I'll hide behind
blame
you on that.
Blame it on me.
Yeah. Again, personal experience, that just seems to be the truth. Look here, Dr. Rutherford, as I mentioned earlier, this conversation truly could go on 30 hours, I'm sure. However, we're running here to the end of our show. Any last words, and also, if you could, give us some contact information on how we can be in contact with you.
People need to understand that your health is the most important asset that you have, if regardless of what your job is or whatever your assignment is in life. The way that you achieve your goals and reach your aspirations is by leveraging the most important tool that you have, and that's your health. You need to invest in your health the same way you do your house, your car, and the stock market. We need to treat ourselves just as good or better than we do our things. I believe that if we do invest in our health, that the body will pay us enormous dividends on the back end, and if we subordinate on the front end, sodas, potato chips, hamburgers, hot dogs, and barbecue, that you will live an incredibly healthy and productive life for many years to come.
That's a beautiful thing. www.blackbarbershop.org. Is that the best place so we can find out more information about you,
exactly.
Barbershop?
Or you can go to www.drrutherford.com. That's www.drrutherford.com. That's www.drrutherford.com. You can see all the things I'm involved in.
Fantastic, brother. I truly appreciate your time, truly appreciate your contribution to the community. I would just like for you to continue in those dark times, those dark moments, to press forward and know that, again, our ancestors are proud. You're helping a number of people, and those unborn appreciate you as well. Thank you very much, good brother.
Thank you so much, brother. I appreciate you. Okay, bye-bye.
Peace.